We are going to begin recording now, okay? And for those of you who are just joining recording, I just introduced Clint Parr, who has joined us in the sales role, and you'll see Clint present later on. So I'm gonna pull up a deck here and share it with you. Okay, can everyone see that? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. It's visible. Okay. So this is the 2022 investor update. It's been a while since you all received an update, and we've been on quite a journey. I remember when I was first thinking about helping Shield IO out, seeing if I could help get the company over the hump. I had a short exchange with Paul Graham, who's one of the founders of Y Combinator, and I described the company and I described my optimism. And he said, Mark, keep in mind that when you're talking about enterprise solutions, it takes companies 1.5 to 3 years to really find their footing and find their stride. Jeff Reed, one of the board members, is going to join us here. I'm admitting him. I kind of dismissed it because I thought we could do better, but it's taken us about 1.5 years since I came on board to find our stride. And I'm going to walk through that journey with you where we are at on that. So I already introduced Clint. We also have some additions to our advisory board that will be covering Stephen Taylor, who is the CIO at a company called Bass Bank. And that's fairly important. We've developed quite a tight relationship with Stephen. That's fairly important because Bass Bank was the first nationally chartered bank to accept cryptocurrencies as a deposit. And it has all sorts of implications. Stephen was also on a team when he was an undergraduate that helped develop quite a lot of the coding behind the hashing technology that's used in crypto, and that was adopted into NIST standards for hashing and cybersecurity. So Stephen's got pretty good background in both cybersecurity and the technology that underlies it. Eric Warren's joined the team. Eric has been a CMO of a wide variety of technology startups in the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles. He's originally from Los Angeles. He's a member of Fred Warren is his father, so he's a member of the Warren family office. And so he has access to quite a lot of advisors in the space because the Warren family have been significant investors in the cybersecurity space in the past. We think those are two important additions. I was hoping to have a final conversation with a C-level executive from a public cybersecurity firm that has tentatively pledged to join the advisory board. But we expect to announce him, within the next week or so. So we think that adds some both intellectual heft to the team and some confidence in the marketplace. So that's sort of what we've been doing in the personnel side. We've really gone through in the past 1.5 years sort of a market evolution that relates to our time. I think we mentioned in the original deck, in the original offering and the deck when John and I joined the team, is that we felt that the migration to cloud, multi-cloud, hybrid cloud, on part of enterprises with significant tailwind. There is migration amongst enterprise customers to the cloud for a lot of functional databases, but there's been a real reluctance to move their data warehouses to the cloud. And we think that timing has turned now and we're finally turning a corner. I'll give you a data point on that. As most of you know, we have a channel relationship with Teradata. And they've got 50 customers who are now addressing the issue of data security and moving their data warehouses to the cloud. We think that's going to be a significant customer inflow here in the near future. And with each of these, ease of implementation, interoperability are primary concerns. And that's important because we do have ease of implementation and we address the interoperability because we don't require any interoperability. Our solution works exogenous to any other applications that they have. These customers are just are in the process of negotiating contracts with Teradata. We think there are going to be a significant customer flow here shortly. And this is just a summary here. We'll go into more detail in a moment. So there's a declining hesitancy of those customers moving to cloud. And the other important data point is legacy data privacy encryption. Companies all have challenges with hybrid and multi-cloud environments, meaning a lot of their solutions don't work. Another important part of our journey here has been a part of the journey that I think every enterprise solution software company experiences. You'll see that we've had quite a few enterprise customers in our funnel. They're all still in our funnel. They're somewhere on hold for a variety of reasons. Some of them are personnel changes. Some of them are hesitancy on the part of our channel partner sales organization. Some of it is hesitancy about our stage of development. Some of it is just, continued debate around the strategy to moving to the cloud. All of this is slow in the enterprise. We started out with the premise that the relationship with Teradata was so close that we could raise a minimal amount of funds, be very capital efficient, get one or two enterprise customers, and that would launch us. We're very close to that, as you'll see, but we became impatient in the past 6 months, and thus Clint joining our team to give us the resources to start exploring the mid-market. So we are doing things in the mid-market, and we're having some success. We've had some early success. So the current channel strategy is we are iterating toward the middle market, putting a lot more focus there and a lot more focus on, we had to do some customer discovery first, and now we're in a dedicated sales process. We do have some product updates for you, new features driven by customer discovery, which John has brilliantly started to build into the platform, including some intrusion detection features, and some new indexing features that are pretty innovative and will make the platform more secure and more resilient to future computing threats. And one of the important things that we built into the platform is the ability to deliver cryptography agnostic security, which also positions us to be a preventative solution for quantum security quantum computing threats. And we're going to cover our funding update. We've been capital efficient as we iterated toward the middle market. We've been largely bootstrapping, and bootstrapping to the point we feel we're positioned for a full rollout. And the challenging time for fundraising, we believe, is ending. There's been a challenging environment for the first two quarters. We believe that's ending as the best practices investors are starting to, be comfortable with where the market valuations are. So with that, I'm going to dive in. At the end of this, we'll have a Q&A session. So just want to note that if you have any questions that come to mind or top of mind during this, just post them into the chat and we'll take them off. We'll start taking the questions off the chat as we start the question and answer section. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on the product updates because what's on top of everyone's mind, I'm sure, is how are we doing in revenue traction. But John will cover just a few of the product updates that we have.
Yeah, I'm just going to go over a few basics. Again, like Mark said, I don't want to get too far in the weeds because there's a lot more interesting and exciting things to share with you guys. Late last year, we finished up the product to the point where we were ready to go out and acquire a customer. We developed, you may or may not remember our product roadmap when we met last. It included a graphical management interface, which we completed. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback on that our product compared with every other product for, especially on the encryption side, is hands down the easiest to use. The implementation that people at Teradata especially are excited to work with that product when we start to do implementations with some of their customers. The next major thing we did was, our original product was just an encryption tool. So it was designed to provide encryption for certain pieces of sensitive personal information or financial information. In addition to that, because we live at the driver level, essentially every piece of traffic that goes back and forth from the endpoints that touches the database goes through our drivers. So it was obvious to us that we could provide, it's a natural place for intrusion detection. So we developed the framework and the first version of our machine learning process. And what that does is our AI engine ARDRA, when we put in a new implementation, we put that in a pass-through method, in a pass-through mode. And so she just sits there and learns the architecture. So she learns the natural flow of queries and transactions that go from each endpoint in the enterprise and touches the database. And she develops signatures and she stores all that information. And the first iteration of this product just provides notifications. So when she sees, once we take her out of learning mode and we tell her to watch for workflow and provide notifications, if she sees a transaction comes through that's outside the norm for that particular endpoint, she provides a notification to a DBA so they can take action on that if they have a potential intrusion. Later this year in the fourth quarter and first quarter next year, our goal with that product, with that additional product, is to provide a proactive denial and risk mitigation for those intrusions. So right now, ARDRA just notifies when a threat's made. Once we teach her to be a little smarter, she will apply a scoring system to those potential threats. And when she sees threats that are particularly dangerous, we will give her the opportunity selectively to actually stop workflow. So she'll actually shut down the transaction at that point and again do a notification. But at that point, access from that client endpoint to the database will be restricted so that if there is an intrusion, you put a policeman at the door right away that shuts the traffic down. And then lastly, when you do encryption of databases like we're doing, you lose some of the natural efficiencies that are built into database architectures, especially as it relates to indexing. Indexing in databases is designed to speed things up. So it sort of pre-sorts a lot of things. As you can imagine, once you encrypt something, that data is no longer really sortable. So if you wanted to sort things by state code, for instance, the encrypted data is not in the same alphabetical order as states used to be. So you lose some of the ability to do to take advantage of indexes in databases. And so we have outlined and architected a system that will replace the indexing system that's native to the SQL server with our own B-tree indexing system that essentially will encrypt the data, but then store the index in an unencrypted order so we can take advantage of those indexing efficiencies even though the data is encrypted. And this will be a very unique offering that doesn't exist anyplace else that we know of in anybody's encryption technology. So that's going to be some pretty powerful stuff. And with that, I will get out of the technical stuff. Mark, you're muted.
So, yeah, just some background on that. You know, the intrusion detection system has been very well received. People use a lot of intrusion detection systems. And this is built into our platform to detect whoever has that some unauthorized data capture is happening from the database. So it's, it's for Bank of Oklahoma, which I'll get into, which is a very nearly a customer. That was a pretty important component. So I'm going to go on to the next page and reposition, my thing here. So, as I mentioned, one of the things we've discovered, which is not a surprise, is that you know, enterprise takes a long time. There are a lot of disruptions in enterprise. There are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of stakeholders in enterprise sale. But these are just a smattering of the customers that we have in our funnel that we've gotten far long enough with that and are still active, shall I say. Everyone from Unum, Citi, Bank of New York Mellon, Royal Bank of Canada, Morgan Stanley, and GTAA. And I'll use Morgan Stanley as an example. You know, we got down to the point where, you know, we had licenses in front of Morgan Stanley. But as a result, that was right after probably 2 quarters after E-Trade acquisition closed. And, you know, someone from the E-Trade, security team got involved and became really cold feet about attempting to implement a startup, you know, without a track record. So they went, they tested one of our competitors, and the competitor product couldn't perform. Okay. So now they're on hold. They're on hold and basically waiting to, you know, if you successfully implement anyplace else, we'll go with you, but we want to see a successful implementation. This is sort of, you know, one tidbit of a story that's been going on throughout our sales funnel. So the point is, we've got a lot of people up in the air. A lot of people are at different stages of, you know, either waiting for someone else to go be first at an enterprise level, or just discomfort in general that we don't have a track record, or some sort of personnel changes, which has been, you know, as we've all discovered during the great resignation, that's affected everybody. And it's affecting decisions in progress of companies migrating the balance, the most important and the most secure part of their operations to the cloud. As I mentioned, we feel that's breaking open. And we're, you know, we've got some companies that are in our funnel that were more abundant that now become more active conversations. But just to summarize the most active ones is we are awaiting a signed license agreement from the Greater Toronto Airport Authority. We've received verbal approval from everyone. It's not a big deal. It's a $40,000 deal, but it's sort of a test deal that could be used at other airport authorities in Canada with the Canadian Airport Authority. So it's an expected ARR of $40,000, but I would look at it as more of a test to a much wider and larger implementation. Bank of Oklahoma has given us a verbal commitment for a proof of concept, but we're sorting through right now what division and what use case they're going to execute that proof of concept. GoDaddy right now, we've got paper in front of, we've got not only a proposal, but paper in front of, and we're just awaiting a decision. So, you know, these are three that we've gone pretty far down the funnel with that we're pretty close to signing as an enterprise class customer as our first customer. And the importance of that, I want to underline, right? A lot of our companies in our sales funnel, that's their hesitation is, you know, we want to see someone else do it first. I think if we get someone else to do it first, we start having a lot of these companies start falling in line. I can tell you just my confidential evaluation is that there's been a great hesitancy on the part of our channel partner in the enterprise class, Teradata, on their on the ground personnel with really pushing hard on us because of a lack of implementation elsewhere. I think if we get one successful implementation, we become a solution for the 50 customers they have in their queue right now that can't move their last remaining and most robust applications to the cloud, which is their data warehouse. So that's where we are. But that led also to our frustration, right? Naturally, we don't want to wait forever to get a customer closed, and we don't want to wait forever to start moving along. So as a lot of companies do when they're in an enterprise space, you know, we sort of iterated, I wouldn't say it's a pivot at this point, but we've iterated our sales strategy to the middle market. That, of course, takes somewhat more robust marketing effort and more robust coverage infrastructure. But, you know, I don't regret giving it a try for a year, year and a half to acquire our first customer in the enterprise class. We've learned a lot. We are on the verge of signing a couple of customers. I do think that will initiate a number of other customers to come through the door. But as like I mentioned, we're impatient and need to move forward to more rapidly closable deals. I also don't regret it because it was really the capital efficient way to do it. And so we're embarking on an effort in the middle market, and I am going to turn it over to Clint to describe what he's been working on because he's been heading up that effort.
Thank you, Mark. And hey, it's good to meet everybody, even virtually. Mark, you might also mention that the Toronto and the GoDaddy, those are both Teradata deals, right? So that if one of those dominoes falls, it's very visible to Teradata.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Thank you. All right. So when we decided to start exploring the middle market, we got out our Rolodex, quite frankly, and tried to find friendly CIOs in banking and healthcare, and also some kind of early innovation companies that were willing to take a look at what we're doing and maybe do a proof of concept. And lo and behold, we either got lucky or good. We ended up with a handful of really good leads, but also some really good market intelligence from people that were very open and consulting with us. One of the best ones, Mark mentioned Stephen Taylor as an advisor. He is a CIO at Vast Bank. That's the crypto bank. They have a $35 million SAP investment so that they could handle crypto. And he's very much an innovative CIO. And as soon as this migration is done, we undoubtedly will have Vast Bank as a client and a really cool public client, if you might add that. So from that market intelligence, what these guys were telling us was, hey, most banks don't do a lot of their own IT work. They outsource that, for crying out loud. So let's go focus on really the core banking systems, which is the next slide, Mark. There we go. So in looking at the core banking systems, that's FIS, Fiserv, Jack Henry, SS&C, are really the big ones that have like tens of thousands of customers, both enterprise and SMB. There's also a lot of niche type core banking systems, Smiley and Ricola and guys like that, that are probably easier to get into or faster. So we're just doing all the above. So we started out approaching about 25 different core banking platforms looking for partnerships. And they have different varieties of partnerships. Some want to be marketing partners with you. Some want you just to be integrated into their systems and they just resell you that way. And some are interested in private label. So we have sponsorships in about four or five of these companies right now, and we're migrating towards more of the program management side of the house. But when we get to that, that'll be a matter of, okay, how much bandwidth do we have to really take these guys? Because they're so large in their customer base, much larger than Teradata. This gives us a massive pathway to the SMB, but also enterprise. A lot of these guys are international. So if we want to expand internationally, these will be good candidates to do so. And then FIS, they really distinguish themselves on being the technology leader in this space. And they have their own funding mechanisms, and they have invited us to apply to be a part of their accelerator here in about 3 or 4 months. Okay. Next one, Mark.
Yeah, I just want to mention there that, you know, the other than the systemically important banks, and there's even one systemically important bank, they all run almost every bank in the country. Vast Bank is moving away from it, but almost every other bank in the country runs their systems on a core banking platform offered by one of these providers.
Right. And that's where all the data is. Go back one. We got to work on your moderating skills. All right. So as we're
happy
doing
to hand them over.
All right. So as we're doing the core banking systems, guys, why not go learn from what we did at Teradata and also approach the core database platforms? So besides Teradata, let's add Snowflake, Microsoft, AWS, SAP, we know we'll get to through Vast Bank. And so we're closely in process with Snowflake and Azure. We're enrolled in some of their programs. This is a pretty heavy marketing lift to get in these, and also some work on through our CTO to really work with these guys. But it's worth the time, because at the end of the day, this is a pathway to the healthcare vertical, because these guys are housing a lot of the electronic healthcare records customers. And EHR is where you start to sell into the healthcare market, just like going to core banking systems to sell into the banking market. So this is both a technology integration play, but also a way to get to another market very efficiently. Go ahead, Mark. All right. We have a couple of events that we're participating in, and one we're planning. We're attending the Regional FinTech and Venture Summit in Little Rock, Arkansas next month. It is run by FIS, which is one of our number one core banking partner targets. FIS has actually organized all the venture capital and even some angel capital in Arkansas to invest in companies that they want to work with. So they just have a summit. They bring in all the tech companies, cybersecurity, and transaction banking, you name it. And essentially with this incubator, bring in all the banks that are regional to the area, and everybody evaluates the technology. The investors come in to look at viability of investing, accelerating. And then also the banks themselves are looking at, okay, what kind of new tech do I want in my shop? So that should be a really, really good summit. And it's the first time it's happened, and they're really excited about it. And we are too. Mark mentioned that we've partnered with Northeastern State University. They're the more aggressive, I'll put it that way, cybersecurity college in this region. Really sharp operation. And we were referred to them by a US congressman, oddly enough. And so now we've developed this relationship, and we're going to have our own conference sometime in the first half of next year. And this is really all about getting our brand recognized and having some thought leadership. So this will be very similar to the Arkansas conference with fintech leaders. The core banking systems guys will be there. Academia, of course, and also banks. So hopefully you get some customers and also some thought leadership. As we're going through this exercise with Northeastern, we're putting the plans in place to really build out a Shield.io lab or sandbox for their students and professors. So we'll have really lots of hands on our platform, and hopefully students that can do things like upgrade or test or whatever we want to have happen there. But the important thing is that's a really good endorsement, because a lot of people have asked, hey, as a cybersecurity college looked at this or evaluated it or signed off on it. So we will get that in due course as we go along. One more, Mark.
Yeah. And, just as a sidelight, we have been doing some virtual cybersecurity events with a couple of family office groups. From a thought leadership standpoint, we're going to do an on-the-ground one. We're helping organize in Ann Arbor, Michigan for October 13th and 14th around deep technology, which includes cybersecurity. So we're a co-sponsor participant in organizing that conference. That's pretty significant, because the cryptography department at University of Michigan is considered, once you get past MIT and Berkeley, it's probably the third leading one, with quite a few of the leading cryptographers are addressing quantum, for example, there. So I think that's pretty important. And these are all things we're doing, on the skinny with very little expenditure. And obviously we'd love to expand this footprint of events we do, but we're attempting to do this with virtually no money at this point. So I'll go on here, and what do we have next?
Very resourceful. All right. So I'm looking for the day of having thousands and thousands of leads and a big funnel. So we have a lot of marketing support that we're going to need coming up pretty soon. Our indirect and direct marketing programs are really quite significant if we have the resources to do it. So just in the indirect, just with banking and the database guys, if we have Teradata and one of those banking system partners, we'll be managing the relationship of thousands of salespeople. And I've played that game many times where you have to really have front-end marketing people keeping the salespeople attentive to what we're doing and helping them sell at the same time. So we're going to need help there. And then also the big core banking systems guys, they have a lot of partner conferences, which are terrific because they put you in front of their customer base. And so we'll be asked to participate in those. And then also from a pure marketing kind of vertical management standpoint, when we go into EHR, we'll need to have someone putting together an indirect marketing program around that as well too. On the direct side, we have lots of inbound and social media programs fairly well planned out. We have a very, very good digital marketing company here in Tulsa who's agreed to do a campaign for us for practically free. We'll just do a percentage of revenue with them just on the first one. They are the best in Oklahoma. I've worked with them many times. Also through direct marketing, we'll have our Shield IO conference. And then again, we'll need some vertical expertise and, you know, lots of hands and understanding of what's going on in the banking healthcare vertical themselves. So be expecting this need. And I think it's going to be more urgent than we thought even a month ago.
So, you know, as Clint's alluding to, you know, we've gone through a journey of kind of finding our path, finding where we're getting the best responses from a product market fit. We were hoping to have news for you today that Greater Toronto Airport Authority, had become our first customer, and that we were really, you know, that we had an expectation in the next week we would sign the second one. You know, I can't bring that news to you today. But what I can tell you is that Jay Irwin, and we're hoping to have him on the call today here, has told us these 50 customers are in waiting. Prove yourself, they're coming. Okay. And so we really feel we need to sort of position ourselves to accommodate that. Clint's had a really rapid uptake in the middle market. And I think you can tell by his presentation to you all that, you know, he's quite excited. He's all in, he's bought it. So I wanted to cover for a minute where we are. You know, we had a 2019, there was an A note raise where the company raised, and it was before John and I were involved, $800,000. There are maturity dates on those notes, various dates during 2022. And the reason I have this slide is to address our plan. And the terms are 6% interest, 20% discount, with a $3,500,000 valuation cap. You know, our resolution of those notes are a month-to-month extension of maturity into a qualifying investment. And as you know, the qualifying investment, I'll remind you, is $1.2 million in a priced round, which is a typical of a qualified investment. And so let me give you an idea where we expect to be. And I didn't put this on a slide, regrettably, but I'll just communicate it verbally. We're expecting to have Greater Toronto Airport Authority closed here in the next week. They're on a very urgent time. We expect to have at least $250,000. We're at zero right now, but we expect with a high degree of confidence to have $250,000 worth of ARR by the end of the year. We do think that $250,000 ARR will allow us to go out and raise. And I'm confident that we'll be able to raise between a $15 and a $20 million priced round at them. But the customers aren't in yet. We don't have the deal signed, but it's a high expectation on our part. I've never communicated, up until this time, I really haven't communicated with anybody what we expect, you know, or an expectation of revenue or what that would be within a timeline, other than the fact that our goal was by the end of last year to have three customers signed up. That obviously didn't happen, and thus our pivot to the middle market. So we have so that's our proposed resolution for the existing notes. And I think that's a fairly conventional solution. On the B notes we raised $425,000 at 6% interest, 20% discount, a $10 million valuation cap. So that's where we stand with the current notes. None of those notes are near maturity. But the A notes are nearing maturity because that money was raised about 3 years ago. This is what the cap table looks like right now. We have, $800,000 raised in the A notes. $425,000 raised in B notes, but we have an additional authorized B notes of $1,275,000 that was authorized by the board. Again, we didn't aggressively raise toward that because we wanted to be capital efficient. And, you know, again, our hypothesis was that we could capture, you know, two or three customers through the strength of the Teradata relationship. For a variety of reasons, that did not transpire, or it did not transpire in the timeline that we expected. So we're looking to really expand our efforts on the middle market and really accelerate, just get this thing kickstarted and going. We have a lot of reason to believe that we're at that inflection point. So we're going to complete the authorized financing. The fundraise is $1,275,000 available. We'll raise a minimum of $500,000 to close on the current terms on Note C, what we're calling a Note C, which will be the current terms that are the B notes. We'll add, because people have invested on the B notes 15 months ago on those same terms, anywhere between 15 months ago to 6 months ago, we're going to add a preferential amendment to those B notes, and we'll be sending an email to those holders here shortly as to what that will be. It's most likely to be a greater discount that's available on the qualifying financing. Use of funds for those will be personnel, sales, marketing, onboarding. We are anticipating we'll need some onboarding help by the end of the year to get to that 250,000 ARR number. We'll bring Clint on board. I want to mention to you that with GitWit, the firm that Clint referenced, that's willing to do some work for us on the come, but we will have to pay some base expenses that they have, and not their profit on those expenses. So we'll have to expend money on that. We also have, and Clint, you can beat me up later if I'm jumping the gun on this. We also have identified a very talented marketing individual in the cybersecurity space. That's a marketer that is in essence, their CMO. She doesn't have the title, but in essence, their CMO for a public cybersecurity company that is willing to join the team, you know, when we're on more stable financial footing. That'll probably come with a price round, because person has certain obligations. I don't want to commit to her until we have a longer runway on funding. And we're going to need some technology infrastructure to support clients. And we'll need to put that in place, particularly as we go after the mid-market. It wasn't as important in the enterprise market. It's more important in the middle market to make our sales, our closing and onboarding process more efficient. So that's our ask right now. Other than Clint, you have an ask as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. So we had mentioned FIS and a lot of different core banking systems, and we could certainly use many more relationships inside of those companies. So the Jack Henry's and all those. We're at the mid-level. So even some senior executive types you might know, we would love to have a connection so it could go top down through some of those organizations.
Okay, we're going to stop the share here and look to see if we have any questions at this moment. I don't see anything in chat, so feel free. We're going to open it up to questions.
John and Mark, thank you very much. It was a great summary. John, I think I owe you a phone call. We've been surviving an epic flood here in Yellowstone, so I owe you that. And Clint, nice to meet you. Two questions. The first is, you mentioned Azure, and I can't remember what other cloud you're enabling on. Is that more of an SMB play? Like, is it plug and play? You go to the Azure marketplace and you say, hey, I'm running SQL on the cloud. and I want to get this sort of encryption. And what level within Microsoft are you talking to? Is that just their channel players who are trying to onboard ISVs into Marketplace?
Yeah, for most of these, we're in their partnership program, and that's a matter of, you know, figuring out where you're going to integrate to and what kind of market you're going to pursue. And we're not that far along right now, quite frankly, Jeff. We just started this about a month ago, so.
But that could Jeff, we've gone as far as making the application Azure. So that's how early we are. Part of the technology infrastructure we need is an evolution where we'll be able to deploy the technology on a plug and play basis. We're not there yet with the technology. It's more of just getting the exposure in the marketing channel, you know, and being able to work with the customers, you know, one-on-one. I know Azure, the Azure marketplace, and Azure is not the best place to pursue that strategy. The Snowflake partnership program is more amenable to that. And they're also really amenable to working with startups. You know, they really want early stage companies engaged on the platform. And that's really refreshing. I mean, I haven't really talked about all the issues that we've had working through the Teradata ecosystem, but part of it is that they're not accustomed to working with early stage companies, right? And so it's been a challenge. Snowflake seems much more geared toward, you know, hey, we want to get you out there. We want to get your technology in the ecosystem and start getting some customer feedback on this.
Got it. Thanks. The second question was Toronto Airport Authority. They were a client of mine once at Aero.
Oh, really?
In IoT. They had deployed an IoT solution from us that runs on top of Azure. And could you give us more details about the urgency of their decision making and what's driving the customer decision?
No, I think the urgency there is they're moving they have two live nodes of their data warehouse, and they're in a process with their contractor WePro. I don't know if you're familiar with WePro, moving that to the cloud. And they want everything encrypted before they move in the cloud. Yeah, so they're under a mandate within 60 days to move to the cloud. And they're not moving to the cloud without encryption.
Let me address that a little bit, Mark.
Okay.
You can go a little more background. The real urgency with them, Jeff, comes from they're trying to institute a system similar to what we have with the TSA PreCheck. And in order to do that, they have to expose passport information and personal identification information to a third party, like kiosk provider, people that are going to be scanning the information at the airports. And they don't feel comfortable doing that and having that data exposed unencrypted. So they've already signed the deal to do the pre-check system. Like, that's already a done deal. And that's what's creating such urgency with them, because they do not feel comfortable implementing that solution with that vendor having access to the unencrypted data. And so it's actually a perfect use case for us.
And it's terrific.
In the United States, I'm assuming the airlines, when you put in your TSA number, there's some sort of validation, right? Because your boarding pass shows up as TSA PreCheck.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great test case for our technology.
And it's even a better test case, Jeff, because it's two nodes, it's two databases.
For our first
implementation, you know, it's not overwhelming, and we'll be able to really document our onboarding process well.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions?
Hey, Mark, it's Andy Muma.
Hey, Andy, how are you?
Good. Well, one of the things I'm interested in is what's the state of the environment regarding competition? Where are we at relative to other providers?
You know what I would say is the legacy providers out there are really struggling to get their technology to work in hybrid and multi-cloud environments. So the new technology provider that we see most active out there is Baffle. And Baffle deploys a different technology with the claims they can do what we can do. And they've raised quite a lot of money. They've raised, I think, cumulatively $15 million. So they have quite a team out there. We're just not seeing a lot of implementations of them. So there's something, you know, there's something that is preventing their implementations, or there's a barrier there that they're not closing on. And we don't know why, candidly. But I can tell you Volmetric and Integrity, a lot of the other vendors are really struggling in hybrid and multi-cloud deployments. And I think most of the enterprise class customers, as they're moving their data warehouses to the cloud, that's the environment they want to be in. I will tell you, there is a preference to dealing with someone established, no surprise, and they're getting proof of concepts, but all the market intelligence we're getting is they're struggling. And that's the market intelligence we're getting. I allow for the fact there are things happening out there that we don't know about, but that's the market intelligence we're getting right now. And that's why we think we're on the verge of, really being able to convert, more than a handful of the Teradata customers at this point.
Great, thanks for that that information. And as a follow up, have you guys touched base? And I'm kind of leveraging a past life here. There is a substantial mid-tier level bank data processing provider out of South Dakota. Have you been in contact with them at all?
Nope.
I see Jack Henry, FIS, et cetera. So right. I'll see what I can find to it. And again, you're stretching my brain cells a little bit to kind of go back that far, 15 years. But that might be a door opener for you.
Okay, I appreciate that, Andy. Is there anyone else online that has another question?
I'd like to add one thing to the competition question mark that Andy brought up. And that was that out of the horse's mouth at Teradata, I will tell you that those 50 customers they have in the pipeline to move to the cloud, Teradata, quote unquote, does not have an acceptable solution on the shelf right now for any of those companies. So they're in really quite a spot, because a number of those companies, they've got that revenue booked and they're under the gun to complete delivery on that, because they're a public company, and get those implementations done. So they're watching sort of with bated breath of what's going on, especially with this first customer we have, because the indications we're getting is that they're going to plug us in as that solution, because quite frankly, they don't have any other choice. The only other company they've tested, they did a test with Talus, and it failed miserably. Talus was not able to succeed on the automatic scaling up and scaling down of the cloud architecture. And so Talus had to go back to a re-engineering mode. It's going to be 18 months before they have a product to market. That's their timeline. So we're pretty excited about that.
And we already know that Talus has other scalability problems as well, in terms of number of fields that they can encrypt and the amount of data they can encrypt with their core engine. So there's an opportunity here. I'll add a postscript to that. We have a lot of opportunity in front of us, and there are challenges with marketing data security. Okay, and this is something I intended to cover earlier in the meeting. People need it after they've had an incident. That's when they're most aware of their need. As long as they haven't had an incident, there's a tremendous complacency in enterprise class, and they kind of kick the ball down the road. And Clint, we've learned in the middle market, that's not the case, right? They're in fear. There's a lot of private equity acquisitions going on out there. Private equity firms just have a checkbox. You've got to have data security. You have to have encryption. And so that's why we're tapping in all this energy in the middle market. But I will say part of what we're doing right now, and part of what Gitwood will be working with us on, is an A/B testing. We're going to test both the fear component, which is an obvious marketing message to send out there, but the B test will be that we really enable their business. We enable them to go to the cloud, enable a wider range of users to use the data securely, and because we're scalable, we allow them to protect more data. And what John didn't mention in his humility was in developing of the management console, the admin console, is we really allow the user to have really granular control over their data, meaning they can deliver that data to a user, not deliver it to certain users, not deliver the protected data to certain users by column, by cell. We can granularly determine this, whether they get part of the data, and whether that's masked. They get faux data, for example, a developer, you know, if you want a true development environment, you want them to work with all the data, so they get faux data. So we're really close to both solving the use cases of our data privacy platform and solving the use cases that homomorphic have. And so we think that the business enablement message may resonate quite well. And we're going to test it against a fear message, but it'll be our first real attempt to deploy getting a mass messaging out, as we've been really focused on large enterprise customers that we've been engaging through Teardown.
Hey John, it's Jeff again. I saw that JP Morgan hired Charles Lim, the quantum genius, which is way above my pay grade. And you mentioned the ephemeral quantum at one point, I think. So is the notion, okay, it's just a different encryption and we're a pass-through engine, or is there something special to what you're thinking about?
No, it's basically because we live in the middle, we're very mobile. So, you know, if it comes to the point where, you know, quantum can break a 256-bit key, which, by the way, we don't feel like that's going to happen. But if it does happen, it's quite easy for us to put in a new encryption technology and as just a plug-in. You know, our system is really encryption agnostic. So we can do whatever we want to the data on the way by. If we need to use a longer key, if we need to use a different encryption standard, if we need to go out and, you know, use a custom tokenization system from a third party, we can really use all those solutions because of where we live. And that's unique to our product, you know, in with any of the companies that we see. So that's really what it is.
Okay, if there are no other questions, we're going to close the meeting off. And I want to emphasize to any of you, feel free to reach out to us personally. We are going to reach out to everyone with an opportunity to join the new note. We are also going to reach out to the handful of investors who have the B note with a presentation of what we're going to offer as a preferential amendment to those notes. But unless anyone has any other questions, I think we're going to let y'all go. Appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Mark and team.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, thanks everybody. Oh, and we will be making this as a recording available. We'll send you a link to it, as well as everyone who could not attend.
Great. Right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.